98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo, the 4 o'clock reset. Brought to you by Collins Comfort Masters, proud home services partner of the Arizona Cardinals. 4 o'clock reset.
So we get to the, in this case, near halfway point of the Burns and Gambo show. We hit the reset button, get you caught up on what's going on in sports. We call it the 4 o'clock reset. Here on Burns and Gambone, we're going to start this 4 o'clock reset with the Phoenix Suns, winners of 8 straight games, and they will try to make it 9 tonight as they're hosting the Minnesota Timberwolves at Footprint Center. Tip-off is at 7 o'clock. We will take you right up until pregame coverage, so we've got some bonus Burns and Gambo coming up tonight. We'll be on until 6:30. The biggest Suns story right now, though, is a report from NBA correspondent Mark Stein, who reports that the Suns might be looking at another shooter. Quote, "Despite indications this week from James Jones that he's prepared to stand pat, there are rumbles emanating from the desert that the reigning Western Conference champions have discussed pursuing another shooter for the bench, with Landry Shamet shooting 37%.
Yeah, close quote. No doubt that they're discussing a lot of different things and trying to make that team better. Doesn't mean that they're going to do anything. I still lean towards them not doing anything significant. But to discuss it, yeah, I absolutely expect them to discuss it. And you're right. I mean, with Landry, and a lot of us want to see them do something because Landry Shamet has just not been very good for them this year.
No, I mean, of all the things that James Jones has done in his time here, and certainly worthy of that multi-year contract extension he got the other day, Landry Shamet has not lived up to that just yet. I'm sure he's putting a lot of pressure on himself to live up to that contract. Again, tonight's game starts at 7 o'clock. You'll hear it here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Also tonight at 7 o'clock, and this one can be heard on ESPN 620, the Coyotes coming off a road trip that started well but did not end very well. Tonight they're back home, and they're taking on the Boston Bruins. That game starts at 7 o'clock tonight, Gambo.
Yeah, Boston tonight and then Buffalo tomorrow. So back-to-back games for the Coyotes, your final chances to watch them play out in Glendale at the Gila River Arenas. That's going to be coming to a close really soon.
Yeah, it will be.
So how many home games left? There's not that many home games left.
And then, of course, the question as to where they'll be playing after that. And yesterday we brought you the story about potentially playing at ASU's new hockey facility, which only seats about 5,000 and would require all sorts of money to be put in by the Coyotes just to make that facility up to NHL standards when it comes to locker rooms and things like that. So a lot of moving parts right now for the Coyotes.
Too bad they're not somewhere with cold weather. They could just, you know, let a pond freeze over. That's how we used to play when we were kids. Pond would freeze over, or a sump. I don't even know if you know what a sump is, but the sump would freeze over, and then we'd play in the sumps.
The sumps. So it's one of my favorite Gambo terms right there, playing the sumps. Also, the Final Four of the NFL is this weekend, if that's what you want to call it. The conference championship weekends, the AFC and the NFC matchups, and of course in the NFC, Gambo, two teams we're very familiar with, conference rivals of the Arizona Cardinals, the Rams taking on the 49ers. Good and bad news on the Rams front this week. The good news is that Andrew Whitworth and Ernest Jones should be back on the field. The bad news is that Van Jefferson, their wide receiver, and Taylor Rapp, their safety, both questionable to play in that game. The 49ers have not given an injury report update yet for today. But that's what we've got going into that game. And then, of course, Chiefs-Bengals, and the big one out of this one, Tyrann Mathieu, listed as a full participant despite having not fully completed concussion protocol. Apparently, they are expecting Mathieu to be ready to roll for Sunday's game.
Yeah, and he was the one that was on the wrong end of a lot of those Jamar Chase receptions the
Indeed.
Last time they played each other.
Yeah, that was, what, 266 yards, I think, somewhere around that for Jamar Chase the last time the Bengals played the Chiefs in Week 17 of the regular season. Those games are coming up on Sunday. The early game is the Chiefs-Bengals. That kicks off at 1 o'clock Arizona time, and then the later game is the NFC title game between the Rams and the San Francisco 49ers. But our top story of the day today on the Burns and Gambo show comes to us from ASU, where today offensive coordinator Zach Hill resigned, the fourth coach since the season started last August, to be implicated and caught up in the recruiting scandal going on at ASU. 10 coaches on staff, 4 of them have now been caught up in this. They're working towards replacing those coaches, including Zach Hill, and I know you've got some information about it.
Yeah.
But it continues to be a really bad look for this program, Gambo.
Yeah, these 3 coaches were put on administrative leave with pay last summer. What I was told today is that a couple of weeks ago, they all received letters from ASU's attorneys on campus that they need to resign or be fired. So their ties were severed. They were not going to be able to come back. ASU has elevated a couple of the interim coaches, including Justin Wood, the tight ends coach, and then Bobby Wade, the wide receivers coach. They've elevated them to full-time status. Now, they would not have done that unless they had been vetted and cleared of any wrongdoing. So those guys were vetted. They were cleared of any wrongdoing. So they've been elevated to full-time coaches. Now, Zach, you know, the investigation's been ongoing during the last 7 months. I think it became obvious that the writing was on the wall. He resigned. The belief that he got caught up in it somehow wasn't really a surprise internally at ASU, but the review's been going on. It's going to take more months. But Zach decided to resign. It's very likely that he might have gotten fired too, but he decided to resign. Him and his attorneys knew everything that was happening, and they just decided that it was better to just resign. ASU will hire an offensive coordinator soon. It won't be this weekend from what I hear, but I also hear it will be a very qualified person, and I'm expecting it will come from outside of the organization.
It's become such a tricky situation. Recruiting has completely fallen off the map with this program right now. There are so many question marks about the program, about their ability to kind of focus on the task at hand. Their chief recruiter has been pulled off the road. He's not allowed to recruit right now. It's a mess, and it might get messier when it's all said and done. We had Brian Billick on the show a couple of days ago. He was brought in as sort of an offensive consultant. You said earlier in the show, but just to repeat, he's not going to be the OC, right? Even in light of today's news, he's not going to be the OC, right?
Nope, not going to be the OC. I think they've got somebody in mind. Probably just got to finish it out. But yeah, I'm expecting somebody from outside the organization. May hear next week. I don't think it'll be tomorrow or Sunday, but it might be in the next week that you'll find out who it is.
Yeah, I'm going to read a line from our buddy Chris Kirtman over at SunDevilSource.com as he wrote about the three coaches, Adam Bredeman, Chris Hawkins, Prentice Gill, and now the fourth in Zach Hill, who are no longer part of the program. And in his story, he writes, quote, NCAA investigators have been told in interviews that in addition to Bredeman, Gill, and Hawkins, other ASU coaches participated in impermissible local meetings with recruits. That includes head coach Herm Edwards and associate head coach Antonio Pierce, two people with knowledge of those conversations, told Sun Devil Source. That's a close quote on that one. And at some point, with more coaches being kind of disposed of by the program because of their role in this, I wonder, truly wonder how much longer, certainly Antonio Pierce is going to be able to avoid not being an ex-member of the ASU coaching staff, but how much longer Herm Edwards can continue to avoid this. Because after a while, as it continues to mount, how much more does it have to grow to until Ray Anderson or even Michael Crow steps in and ultimately does something about it?
Well, I think the question is, and I think at this point there is no proof out there that Herm had any direct knowledge of or wasn't, he wasn't setting up these meetings. He wasn't doing it himself. And that's what it would take to get Herm out. I mean, remember, everything was shut down for many months, from March through October. There was nobody in the building. It was basically empty. The on-school learning was done online, and nobody was in the building. Herm even had COVID, and he was out for a couple of months. So what they would have to determine, did he organize these meetings? I don't believe that he did. Did he meet with anybody? Sure. There's a thing in the industry called a bump meeting. You bump into somebody, you run into somebody. It happens a lot, and I think he'll be. I think it's likely that that happened. That he'll be guilty of that. But I don't know that Herm was involved directly in organizing that. And that's what it would take to say, okay, he's done, he's out. He would have to be involved at the organizing level of getting these kids to come in.
Unless the athletic director or unless the president of the university decided they didn't have a tolerance for a head coach who maybe didn't know what was going on, but should have known what was going on, right? I mean, just because if what you're saying is accurate, and he had no idea what was going on, and he just bumped into some of these recruits, you can make a really compelling argument that he should have known what should was going
known.
On.
No
and,
doubt.
And there are some athletic directors who would hold a head coach responsible for not knowing things he should have known. There are some presidents who would hold a head coach responsible for not knowing things that he should have known. And so I do think the idea that he didn't know, that's not always enough to save a guy from keeping his job, right? Or from losing his job. That's not always enough here.
Yeah, I think the question is, did Herm knowingly arrange a recruit visit during the pandemic or the down period?
I don't know if that's the question.
But that's one of the that's the first one you've got to determine. And if you determine that he didn't do that, you can make an argument that you could keep him. But then again, to your point, now listen, ultimately you're in control of the program. It's your coaches. You hired them. If they're doing things, these are the guys you hired. And if they're doing things, that's why ASU in my opinion, they're going to get punished. There's going to be scholarship losses and bowl bans and things like that, because ultimately, there's no doubt about this. Ultimately, Herm is responsible for the people that he brought into the program as his assistant coaches. And if it looks bad on him, it's a bad reflection on him that there was some wrongdoing. I don't disagree with you at all on that.
Yeah. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, at this point, it's easy for us to assume that every Suns game is going to end very well. Because of the way they're finishing these games. Suns and the Timberwolves tonight, and a fresh batch of rumors when it comes to the Suns and what they'll do at the trade deadline. We'll go over them next on the Burns and Gambo show.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo.
Suns will try to make it 9 straight games tonight. They are back home, Footprint Center. They're taking on the Minnesota Timberwolves, a team that if the season ended right now would be the 8th seed in the Western Conference. So they would be playing in that play-in tournament. And perhaps, I suppose, if you really want to look at it, Gampo, you could argue this might be maybe a first-round playoff preview for the Suns. Perhaps, boy, wouldn't that be?
No, but it's the play-in games.
Well, of course, yeah. You don't know how those are going to shake out. But if they end up with the 8th seed, yeah, it could be. Could be a playoff preview for the Suns tonight, maybe, when they take on the Timberwolves. They're good. Yep. They're not great, but they're good, and they're good enough certainly to be relevant in the West, that's for sure.
Yeah, they played last night, and they just really bombed away from three-point range. They took 44 three-pointers last night. They made 10 of them. So they were, and the Warriors were 21 out of 36. So they played last night. They lost 124-115 to Golden State. And what did them in is that they missed 34 out of 44 three-pointers in that game.
Yeah, they were bombs away last night. They are led by, of course, Karl Anthony Towns. They're led by Anthony Edwards, who's just a dynamic young player who's so much fun to watch. And a matchup between he and Devin Booker will be one of the top things to keep an eye out for. And, of course, when talking about Book, a couple of his guys are on this team. There's Karl Anthony Towns. There's D'Angelo Russell, though we don't know if Russell's going to play tonight. He only played 20 minutes last night, left that game early with a shin injury.
Yeah, left shin contusion, right.
Yep, haven't seen anything about his availability and whether he's going to play tonight. I don't know. And, of course, for the Suns, missing a whole bunch of guys. They are DeAndre Ayton, Jay Crowder, Cameron Payne still out for the Suns, JaVale McGee still out for the Suns. We'll see if their status changes at all the closer we get to tip time tonight. But I would imagine the Suns are going to be kind of shorthanded again tonight going into this game. But 8 straight, trying to make it 9. And one thing we know is if it's a close game going into the final 5 minutes, the Phoenix Suns typically save their best for those moments. Yeah. There's no doubt.
How many years does it seem like we've been talking about D'Angelo Russell?
Well, 3. And okay. I think it stopped about a year ago.
He's 25 years old.
We've had the last year off from any D'Angelo Russell conversation. But for the 2 years prior to that year, it felt like we were talking about him every damn day.
Yeah, I think once he got to Minnesota, that was it. You know, he's kind of been buried on a bad team. But man, it was, you know, that was the D'Angelo Russell talk, you know, for so long. Man, mainly when he was in Brooklyn, not after the Lakers, but those 2 years he was in Brooklyn and the thought that he was going to end up here, and then he went to Golden State and he ended up in Minnesota. He was part of the that big trade for Wiggins. But yeah, it does feel like it was a century ago that we talked about D'Angelo Russell coming to Phoenix, and you know, remember how hard that was on me because everybody wanted him, and I kept saying, they're not getting him. Like, it's not going to happen. And he's been in the league since 2015, but he's only 25 years old right now.
Well, I mean, kind of like Devin Booker. He's been in the league since 2015, and he's only 25 years old. It just feels like, you know, guys like that, because they came in so young and they started playing so many minutes so young, it feels like they've been around for a long time. I am grateful that we are no longer having daily conversations about whether the Suns will or should pursue D'Angelo Russell, or whether Devin Booker will or should demand a trade and ask to be reunited with Karl Anthony Towns, his old Kentucky buddy. I am very glad we have put all of those conversations behind us in the rearview mirror, and instead we can look ahead not only to tonight's matchup, but to the trade deadline, which is now officially less than 2 weeks away. February 10th, it's coming up. It's 2 weeks from yesterday, as a matter of fact. We don't know what the Suns are going to do. We hope that they are going to at least have conversations, given that this window that they've got right now, that it's open. Mark Stein, longtime NBA insider, wrote this morning, quote, despite indications this week from Suns general manager James Jones that he is prepared to stand pat, there are rumbles emanating from the desert that the reigning Western Conference champions have discussed pursuing another shooter for the bench, with Landry Shamet shooting 37% from the floor in his first season as a
Yeah, side. Landry's been terrible, and it is something if you look at what do they need. They don't need a center anymore. They don't need a center. They don't need a backup point guard. You could say, okay, can you upgrade Elfrid Payton? But really, it's a third point guard. You know, with the four's pretty set with Jay and Cam, so you're pretty set there. The three's pretty set. I mean, I would think that the one position is a shooting guard off the bench is something. Because of how poor Landry Shamet has played, it might be something that you look at and you say, okay, you know, that's where you go. Now, you've got him under contract for next year and the year after that, so, you know, the chance of you getting rid of him in a trade is slim, very slim.
Very slim, yeah.
So you don't have an open roster spot, so you would have to bring somebody in. You'd probably look for somebody, you know, that doesn't have any, you know, extra time on his contract outside of this year, and maybe you consider it. I still think it's more likely that they don't do anything or something very small rather than something significant.
When Mark Stein writes indications this week from Suns GM James Jones, he's prepared to stand pat. Mark is referring to our conversation with James Jones from Wednesday. This is what James said.
I mean, I always love that question. People always like, how aggressive will you be at the trade deadline, and how aggressive will you... And I'm always the same. I like my team. I like what we have. If opportunities come to improve my team, I'll look at them. But every team's trying to do the same thing at the trade deadline. So unless you're catching someone who absolutely does not want to compete, you're really talking about lateral moves. And, you know, I trust our continuity and our flow.
But again, go back to what Mark Stein reported. The reigning Western Conference champions have discussed pursuing another shooter for the bench. Not saying they will. He's not saying it's going to happen. He's not saying it's imminent. They've discussed it. They better discuss it. You know,
I could say that they've discussed. Yeah, of course they have. I don't think that they sit there. You guys want to talk about potential guys that could be available? No, you know what? Let's not. I mean, of course they do. That's their job. That's what they have to do. Discuss guys that can become available and see if anybody's a fit, you know, for you. The Suns have vehicles to, you know, to get these players, especially with that exception that they have. You know, we talked about the buyout market, whether they could be, you know, big in the buyout market. They don't have a lot of players to trade. Like, there's not anything that, outside of future draft picks, there's nothing that I don't think anybody's going to want. I mean, Jalen Smith, remember Jalen Smith is not under contract next year. So anybody that would, you know, trade for him and like him, they'd be under the same restrictions the Suns are as far as re-signing him next year.
Yeah, no, that makes it kind of difficult. Dario's not an expiring contract. He will be a year from now, but he's not expected to be ready at all this year. You're right. There aren't a ton of great assets to be traded. More than anything, I have my eye on the buyout market. But beyond that, the bigger picture here for me is especially given Shamet's struggles, and they are pronounced. In his last 8 games, he's shooting 29% from the floor. He's shooting 25% from the three-point line. And he's been struggling all season long, but it's really been pronounced as of late. That is something that, as that continues to grow, you're not doing your job if you're the Suns and you're not at least thinking about, hey, can we do better than this? Do we not owe it to ourselves and to our players and to our organization and the fans to do better than this when we're the best team in the NBA? So I hope they're having those conversations, and I would assume they are. I would like those conversations to yield something. I don't think you get this close without buying yourself a little bit of an insurance policy. You know, even if it's a mild upgrade, what did James call it, a lateral move, even if it's something that just barely makes you better, I'd rather have that insurance policy sitting on the bench in case something goes wrong so that when it does, I'm covered. I really want them to go do something.
And you're not spending a lot on that insurance policy.
Right. Yeah, I'm not talking about something
expensive. You're not giving up Cam Johnson. You'd be giving up. If you give up Jalen Smith, Dario Saric, or a first-round pick, nobody cares.
Nobody cares. You can give up five first-round picks at this point. I wouldn't care about that at all. And I don't think they're going to give up five. But I'm overemphasizing for effect. Yeah, absolutely. I'm not talking about one of the big-name guys. I'm not talking about one of your main cogs. I'm talking about buying yourself a tiny little insurance policy in case Landry Shamet doesn't get it going, or in case somebody else gets hurt, or something along those lines. Do you want to pass this along real quick? Because this news is just coming down. We won't play the breaking news sounder for it or anything, but Ian Rappaport is reporting that the Giants are working to hire Bills offensive coordinator Brian Daboll as their new head coach. The two sides will attempt to do a deal and reunite him with his old friend and new Giants GM, Joe Shane. So maybe Daboll is going to be the guy with the Giants, and if he is, I'll be curious to see where the Dolphins go from there, because a lot of people thought Daboll might be headed to Miami to be the coach of the Miami Dolphins, but that might not be the case if the Giants end up getting him. Just something
to keep
an eye on.
Can't get excited about anybody the Giants hire. It's been, since Tom Coughlin left, man, it's been a revolving door.
It's been hard. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo Show, more talk about the Suns, more talk about what they're going to do with the deadline, and more talk about what it is that has made them so great. Our buddy Kevin Pelton from ESPN will stop by next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station, Burns and Gambo.
I've been looking forward to this all day just because every time we talk Phoenix Suns, one of our favorite guys to talk Suns and NBA basketball with is joining us right now on the 72 Sold Sports Line. Of course, I'm talking about Kevin Pelton, ESPN, NBA insider, who joins us here on this Friday afternoon. Kevin, good to have you back on the show. I hope this call finds you well. Thanks for your time today, man. We appreciate it.
It does. Always a pleasure.
Yeah, this has been a lot of fun. You know, we watch this Phoenix Suns team night in, night out, Kevin. And, you know, when a team makes it to the NBA Finals and when they're good, you always expect that there's going to be some lulls in the season, that it's a long season and they just want to get back to the playoffs. Man, this is crazy. We're not seeing this with Phoenix. They just go out every single night and they just beat whoever their opponent is. And we're not seeing that this season, the regular season doesn't matter to them. We're not seeing that right now.
I mean, I think Chris Paul is going to make sure of that, right? That's, you know, kind of his fundamental nature as a player, is that every single play, he is trying to maximize the outcome of that every single game. And I think the Suns as a whole have probably taken on that approach and that attitude.
Yeah, there's so much I want to ask you about. I'm glad you brought up Chris. I want to start with him. And just from your perspective as a guy who's covered the league as long as you have, how the narrative on him has in some ways changed dramatically. At least it has to me, and I'm curious to get your point of view on this. A couple of years ago, man, that contract was a hot potato. Nobody wanted it. People wondered, you know, if he was ever going to be able to finish the season, if injuries were going to define him. That seems like forever ago when it comes to Chris Paul. How, from your perspective covering this league, how has he changed the narrative over these last couple of years with the Suns?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And it's kind of funny because now the player who's still maligned for his contract in that same way is the guy he was traded for, Russell Westbrook, after that down season in Houston. And I think, you know, part of it was understandable because we've seen a lot of smaller guards as they age drop off really quickly. You know, maybe not ones quite as good as Chris Paul, but even extraordinarily good guards tend to age quickly in their 30s. And he has proven the exception to that. You know, I think maybe not surprising in terms of his skill and his basketball IQ. And, you know, the comparison has always been there to John Stockton, who was the other guy who kind of aged like that in terms of his playing career at their size. But the other aspect of it is obviously the way that he's prioritized, you know, his health and taking care of his body. The vegan diet has obviously gotten a lot of attention. And then I think the other thing that's flipped, and you didn't necessarily mention this, but from a narrative standpoint is, you know, a couple of years ago, there was the idea that, oh, nobody would want to play with Chris Paul. He's constantly complaining to his teammates, you know, he's kind of insufferable in that regard. And now, you know, I think he is rightfully considered one of the great leaders in the league.
Yeah, and again, like, nobody talks about that anymore. We've got Kevin Pelton from ESPN. He's our guest here on the Burns and Gambo Show. Kev, the last time we had you on the show, I think it was after a month into the season, month and a half into the season. It was sometime right around Thanksgiving or so, if I remember right. And we said, okay, the Suns are great in clutch time, and there's no way this can continue. Eventually it's going to regress to the mean. Everything's going to average itself out. I know you love to run the numbers, and we love to talk about numbers with you. At some point, is this just who they are, or are you still expecting some kind of a regression when it comes to how they play in these clutch minutes?
I mean, I'm still kind of expecting some kind of a regression, but the larger the sample size gets, the more impressive this is. And if you were going to pick anyone to be the exception to the rule, to the outlier in that regard, it would be a Chris Paul team, or either that or a Dirk Nowitzki team. Those are probably the two individual players who have had the most sustained track records of their teams outperforming, you know, what you would expect from them in clutch situations.
All right, let me pick your brain here. Bismack Biyombo comes in. He's never played this well. His entire career, he's never played as well as he's playing in this stretch with the Suns. All right, we relate it to Chris Paul. JaVale McGee, I didn't know he was that good. I know he's a nice player. He was always everybody's second, third backup center. But he's come here. He's been phenomenal. Does it change the way you view a contract extension for DeAndre Ayton that these other centers can come here and play the best basketball of their careers, and now you've got a big decision to make with DeAndre coming up probably at the end of the season? Does it make you think twice about it?
I mean, if I'm being honest, this is why I didn't think that a max extension was a no-brainer for him back in the fall. I mean, my conclusion on the day they didn't, you know, come to terms on that extension was I still probably would have done it, because I think the risk in terms of, you know, potentially losing him or at least having him on a much less favorable contract this summer wasn't quite worth it. But you can totally understand why the Suns came to the conclusion that they did. I don't think any of those guys are going to entirely replace DeAndre Ayton in a playoff setting, because, you know, his ability to take advantage of mismatches on switches and, you know, his defensive versatility is still an element that just isn't there with those players. But yeah, it is, I think, why you would want to take a little bit of a discount about DeAndre Ayton's offensive improvement once Chris Paul arrived. It's not just Chris Paul. It's also, you know, the pick and roll system that Monty Williams has installed, and, you know, all the shooting and the actions on the weak side to keep defenses occupied. But definitely the Suns have pretty conclusively shown this is about as favorable a setting for a center as you could possibly find.
Yeah, I was even talking to Burns. You like if you don't pay DA, and you know that might allow you when Chris leaves to maybe have money to go get a point guard. If you pay DA and you're paying McHale and you're paying Book and you pay Cam Johnson, you might not be able to go get one of those upper tier point guards or be able to afford that. Let me ask you about Landry Shamet. If there's one weak link in the Phoenix Suns, it's Landry Shamet. He has been terrible for them, just awful. So he's the guy, the backup shooting guard to Booker. He's, you know, he hasn't played well. He's not shooting well. There's a lot of talk that if the Suns are going to do anything, maybe they find a replacement for Landry Shamet. Let me get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, definitely, you know, the weakest link in the rotation, but that's probably saying a lot about the rotation as well, as much as it is how Shamet has played this season. I mean, that's a position that, you know, if you're looking to go find a fill-in, it can be relatively easy to do it. We saw Denver pick up Bryn Forbes a couple of weeks ago, you know, maybe undersized for what you'd want in that spot in the playoffs, but Forbes and Shamet were kind of matched against each other, funny enough, in the second round of the playoffs last year when it was the Bucks and the Nets, and, you know, it wasn't a particularly costly deal for Denver to go get Forbes, but I also think with the amount you've got invested in Shamet with the extension he signed, that, you know, you're just going to give him every opportunity, I think, to shoot his way out of this slump. We know that he's a better shooter than he's shown so far in Phoenix.
Kevin Pelton from ESPN. When we talk NBA, we always talk with Kevin. He joins us here on the Burns and Gambo show. So the larger picture, I saw the article. We actually talked about it for a few minutes on our show a couple days ago. The eight players who could be, you know, trade deadline guys and targets. And you mentioned Eric Gordon. You mentioned Covington. From the Suns' perspective, we had James Jones on the show a couple days ago. He said, I build my team in the summer. Do you think there's something the Suns have to do with the deadline approaching, or if they go into this thing as they are now, do you still consider them one of the favorites to win a championship, even if they don't make a move?
For sure. Yeah. I mean, at this point, I think, you know, we'll see how the Warriors continue to evolve with Klay Thompson's return and, you know, whether Steph Curry can find his way out of the slump that he's currently in. But I think at this point, Phoenix is very likely going to be the number one seed in the West. I think they are the favorites to win the West, and therefore a big-time contender to win the championship is constructed. I mean, if you make a move, maybe it's less about a trade right now and more about something on the buyout market. If you're looking for kind of that wing piece, trying to convince someone that Phoenix is a great place to spend, you know, your March and April and hopefully an extended playoff run. So I think that there's an opportunity there. I mean, it's interesting because coming into the season, it did seem like the natural trade for the Suns was going to be, you know, that versatile 4-5 Thaddeus Young was someone who was connected with them a lot. If it would be a package, something like Dario Saric and Jalen Smith to bring Thaddeus Young back. But now Jalen Smith played well enough. I'm not sure I feel like that move is, you know, enough of an upgrade to justify that.
So they do nothing, and the day after the trade deadline, Kevin Pelton is writing his trade grade story for ESPN.com. You're not going to flunk them if they don't do anything? There will be no F from Kevin Pelton if the Suns stand pat at the trade deadline?
Yeah, I don't see huge urgency for them to do something. I mean, the other interesting aspect is, you know, if you could make a move that turn Saric's contract into someone who maybe makes a little more this season, and so you save a team some luxury tax, but it's someone who's in the last year of his deal. I mean, Serge Ibaka from the Clippers would maybe fit that kind of idea. I mean, that's a possibility, but I don't think there's anything they have to do.
Okay. Always good to hear your voice. Stay well. Thank you for picking up the phone every time we give you a call. We appreciate that, and I know we'll have you on probably in the next month or so. Thank you very much, Kev. Appreciate it.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
Kevin Pelton joining us, 72 Sold Sports Line. Get your price at 72sold.com. Be ready to see your favorite breweries again as the Arizona Strong Beer Festival returns on February 19th at Bell Bank Park in Mesa. Tickets are on sale now, but you can win a pair by visiting the contest page at arizonasports.com. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, a rivalry renewed. But is it really a rivalry? That's coming up next here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station, Burns and Gambo.
All right, let's get an update on our Twitter poll question of the day, which when we rolled it out at 2:30, was pretty overwhelming. I can't imagine much has changed, but let's check in with Eric just to find out for sure.
Burns and Gambo need to know Twitter poll update presented by Sanderson Ford.
Now, keep in mind, about 15 minutes from right now, we'll get much, much deeper into this topic. So for now, we'll kind of tease ahead that we're going to talk a lot about Herm Edwards and ASU coming up at the top of the next hour at 5 o'clock. But with that in mind, Eric, what's our poll question
today? Yeah, real cut and dry. Will Herm Edwards be the coach of ASU football a year from today? Two options, yes or no?
I think he will coach this season, but I would say that after this season, they'll either make a change or he'll step away on his own.
Yeah, if we had changed the question to will Herm Edwards coach this season, I would still be inclined to vote no. I don't think he will.
You don't think he coaches this season?
No, I don't.
Do you think he starts
the
season?
That's interesting.
I'm sorry?
You think he starts the season?
I don't know. I think the season is a long way away. And while this is not an ideal time to make a move at head coach, I just have a feeling that there is so much more of this story to go. And so if we had changed the question, is Herm Edwards the coach of ASU at the start of the season, Gambo, Eric, I would vote no. I would still vote no. It sounds like you would vote yes. And like I say, we're going to talk more about this at 5 o'clock. What are the results of the poll question so far?
81.1%. Can you guess which one that is? Oh, yeah, it's on no. And then 18.9% say yes. Not a bright outlook for Sun Devil football.
No, it's not, for sure. You can vote on that poll question by going to the Burns and Gambo Twitter page, at Burns and Gambo. One word is where you can find that. Speaking of ASU, we turn our attention, Gambo, to basketball as the, I hesitate to even call it a rivalry because it really hasn't been much of a rivalry, but it is an in-state rivalry between ASU and U of A men's basketball, and it renews itself tomorrow, a 12:30, I think, tip time down at McHale Center between the Sun Devils and the Wildcats, and this one gets a little bit of a fresh coat of paint in that Tommy Lloyd, the coach of the Wildcats, this is his first time coaching against his in-state rival. Not that he really made that big of a deal out of it, because he didn't.
I told you guys before, with me, it's simple. I mean, I don't have, it's just never been in me to have the time and energy to root against anybody. And trust me, I've heard, you know, the fan base, you know. So I know it's a rivalry game, which is really cool. I mean, those are fun to be a part of. And I know the fans make it a big deal. And for me, there's nothing personal about it. You know, I just want to come out. And for us, it's another opportunity to play well and get the result we want. So we'll see, you know, if over time, you know, I grow more into the rivalry mindset, you know. I mean, just being honest with you. You know, but at this point, you know, I know it's going to be a fun game. I mean, I know McHale's going to be rocking. I know the fan base is excited for it, and I love being part of those. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Man, if you had Jed Fish, you approach this so differently, right?
Oh,
I mean,
totally.
They got beat. What was it? 70-something, whatever the score was.
70-7 a year ago, yeah.
Like if you're Jed Fish, like somebody asked you about the rivalry, man, they just smoked you by 70 points, and you're like, But when you're Tommy Lloyd, there's only one program in the entire Pac-12 that has more conference losses than ASU right now. There's a couple, but ASU is 6-11 overall, 2-5 in the conference. Arizona is 16-2. Mm-hmm. They're one of the top teams in the country. Now they lost that game to UCLA, and they'll get bumped down a little bit. But they were number three going into that game in the whole country. And Arizona State, they're not going to go to the tournament this year. They're not even going to go to the NIT. So like that, like if you're Tommy Lloyd, why throw some bulletin board material out there and get them fired up talking about the riot? Hey, for Arizona, just another game.
Yeah, and you know what? I think that's part of it. And I think the other part of it is that there's no need to throw bulletin board material up there, because I think from Tommy Lloyd's standpoint, he's speaking the truth. He's like, really, guys, I mean, I get it. They're 90 miles that way. But to us, it's just a game. And the reality of the matter is, and Gambo, you've been working in this market a long time. I've been working in this market a long time. There have been moments where we thought it was going to spark into a rivalry, and it's never happened. It's like when you're trying to start a campfire, right? And you're sitting there, or like when Tom Hanks is trying to create fire on the island in Castaway, right?
Yeah.
And he's rubbing those two sticks together, and he's blowing on it, and he's rubbing those two, and he's working so hard to start a fire. Man, ASU basketball is Tom Hanks in Castaway, and they've been trying so hard to start some kind of a fire with U of A that becomes like this full-blown rivalry fire that you know, Tom Hanks, a fire, I made fire. It's never happened. It sparked.
We thought it was close. We thought that
there.
It was close.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's, you know, there's a column up right now in the Arizona Daily Star by their longtime columnist, does a great job, Greg Hansen. And he points out, first he kind of says, hey, you know, the window's closed for ASU. Like, they had their chance. Arizona was going through some issues. UCLA was going through some issues. That was your chance. And he points out that in the last six years, ASU's won one NCAA tournament game. That was as a play-in as the 11th seed. And it says in 6.5 seasons of Bobby Hurley, they're 110-94. Herb Sendick was 120-109 in his first seven seasons. So you know, it is tough because Arizona State doesn't put any money in their facilities. Arizona just put $100 million in. UCLA just put $140 million in. And ASU is at this old antiquated stadium that was built in 1974, and it looks like it did the day it was built for the most part. They put a little bit of money in, but not much.
I saw my first concert in that building, by the way.
Which one was it?
Billy Joel.
You saw Billy Joel there?
I saw Billy, if you can believe it, Billy Joel played there. Because back in the, when did I see him? It was in the mid-80s. I was in high school. And there weren't a ton of concert venues back in the mid-80s. There weren't a ton of places for guys to go play. There was the Veterans Memorial Coliseum. It was then called the University Activity Center. There just weren't a lot of places for people. So yeah, Billy Joel played there. It was a super small venue. It was great. It was terrific. It made me a Billy Joel fan for life, basically, watching Billy Joel play there. Yeah, but you're right. But that tells only part of the story. It's an important part of the story, but I also don't know if ASU poured $100 million into a new building, would they become U of A? Would they become UCLA? I don't know if the answer to that question is yes. You know, it's almost like you have to become that kind of program first in order to justify spending that kind of money on your facilities. And it's a chicken and the egg thing. I don't know what needs to come first, because there's no guarantee that if you spend $150 million on a new building or to renovate that building, that just like that, you're going to be a perennial top 25 team. It just doesn't work that way, right?
Right, right. No, it doesn't. And now, you know, you've got an ASU program that's just, you know, in shambles, and Bobby got suspended. And
yeah.
and Hansen, in his column, he kind of brings that up, that I can't remember a more agitated me versus the refs persona. And Hurley is unchallenged as the Pac-12's most likely to lose at basketball coach, and talked about how Michael Crow has instructed Hurley to act more professionally. And, you know, listen, I mean, you do question. Look, ASU's pro basketball and football, man, just shambles right now. Yeah. Like it's there's been some low points for both. This has got to be right up there.
Yep. And when we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, we'll turn our attention from ASU basketball to ASU football. And after the latest coaching departure under Herm Edwards and among his staff, the question at some point has to become, can Herm Edwards survive everything that's going on in his program? Should he be allowed to survive everything that's going on in his program? We'll talk about that next on the Burns and Gambo Show.